Thank you for joining the Osprey Medical Investor Conference Call. Your speaker today is Mr. Mike McCormick, CEO and President, Osprey Medical. All participants are in a listen-only mode. There will be a presentation followed by a question-and-answer session. If you wish to ask a question, you will need to press the star key followed by the number one on your telephone keypad. Please go ahead, Mr. McCormick.
Thank you. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, and welcome to Osprey Medical's quarterly results call for the period March the 31st, 2018. I'm joined on this call by Nancy Ness, Osprey's CFO. Earlier today, Osprey released its 4C, Appendix 4C, for the first quarter of 2018, and I'd like to update you on these results as well as the overall growth of our business throughout the quarter and the future outlook. Before diving into the details of the quarter itself, I wanted to give you just a quick summary of some of the financial highlights of the quarter. Quarterly revenue was at $529,000, which was up 8% quarter on quarter. Divert unit sales were at 1,430, which was up 4% quarter on quarter. Ditech unit sales were at 94 units. That was double, a little, about 107% up quarter on quarter. We were pleased to report that we had a third territory that went cash flow positive. North Carolina went cash flow positive in the quarter. Also, we had some positive indicators for the future. We had 15 new customers purchase in the quarter, and we had a 33% increase in the number of samples that went out in the quarter that fueled 45 hospitals that are in the sample-to-purchase pipeline. Cash receipts for the quarter were at $502,000, which was up 6% quarter on quarter, and we have a strong balance sheet with US$28 million on March the 31st of 2018. Although these results represent a 14th consecutive quarter of revenue and unit growth, our sales trends are more variable than we expected, and we didn't achieve the unit growth goal that we had set for the quarter. For the balance of my comments, I wanted to focus on two different areas. First, I wanted to give a little color on the quarter, talk a little bit about some of the root causes of why was the growth in the divert at 4%, which was certainly below the company's expectations of what we thought would happen. So I want to give some color on that. And then the second thing is I wanted to back away from the actual quarter itself and talk more universally about some of the things that we've learned about the business and some of the things that we're focused on to make it stronger in the future and accelerate the growth in future quarters to 20% quarter on quarter and above. So those are the two big areas that I'll talk about. First, we'll dive into giving you a little bit of color on the current quarter or the last quarter of sales. So divert sales were up 4%, but that was certainly disappointing. Much of the disappointment and much of the lower than expected sales was because of a lower than expected sales performance in San Antonio in Q1 of 2018. As many of you know, San Antonio is our original territory, and it's also the one that is the blueprint, if you will, for all the other territories. That territory has actually never had a down quarter, and in its 14th quarter, it did go down quite a bit. We actually were down by about 114, not about, we were down by 114 units of the Divert Plus in San Antonio as compared to the previous quarter. So it was off quite a bit in that quarter. It's the first time in 14 quarters that we've experienced a drop in San Antonio's business. If you remove San Antonio from Q4 numbers and Q1 numbers, so you take San Antonio out and look at all the rest of the territories, the growth rate was about 18% in all the other territories. So give you a little color on what caused the decline in San Antonio. Why did that happen, given there was 13 quarters before we didn't have that? What happened in this last quarter? So there was three things that I want to highlight just to give you some color on what impacted San Antonio in the first quarter. The first of these three is that we had an unusual high level of doctors that moved within the territory, three doctors. That's a bit unusual to have three high-volume users of our product. One of them is moving from San Antonio to McAllen, Texas, which is in the Rio Grande Valley. One of them is moving from San Antonio to Dallas, Texas. And another is got in a lawsuit, actually, with his own partners, and he had to get a new had to get with a new practice, and that took about a month and a half. But so all three of those disruptions, or all three of those doctor moves, caused disruption for about a month and a half in their business as they moved to new places. I guess the good side of that is that two of those moves, the one to Dallas and the one to McAllen, represent opportunity for us. In fact, in both of those areas, we're right now doing evaluations in their new hospitals because those physicians have asked for those products to be on their shelf. So unusual to have that movement, but that certainly affected us, that movement of three doctors. The second thing in San Antonio that was a bit unusual is, I guess it's not completely unusual, but staff leaving a hospital is not completely unusual, but to have two of their major hospitals have quite a bit of staff turnover was unusual. So the Methodist system and the Baptist system in San Antonio had some staff turnover, staff meaning the nurses and technicians that work in the cardiac cath lab that assist the doctor in treating the patients. The reason that staff turnover would affect us or would affect Osprey is as they train new staff, and certainly they do, they hire new staff, but as they train new staff, that new staff members have a lot of things to remember. Certainly we come in and train those new staff members on our product. One of the things that new staff members often, our staff members often look at is these patients come in as what's their creatinine level or their kidney function. And if they, amongst all the other things they're trying to remember, if they miss that kidney function and miss the fact that they have a bad kidney and the product is not put on the table, then we would lose that case unless the doctor tells them to stop and re-prep everything. So that's an ongoing effort for us to make sure that we train all those people and they get very comfortable with it. So that was something we felt also. And then the third thing in San Antonio was there was a bit of seasonality. There was two major meetings last quarter, the ACC and the NCDR, and we had a number of physicians that were at those meetings presenting and participating in those meetings, and that pulls them out of their practice for 4 to 5 days, and so that certainly had some impact too. All three of those reasons, the movement of the doctors, the some of the turnover of the staff, and then the seasonality with a couple of meetings was disappointing, but certainly the numbers coming down by 114, that just gives you some color on what caused that. On the positive side in San Antonio, we didn't lose any hospitals in the quarter. So there wasn't an underlying reason like we lost a hospital. We still have 83% of the hospitals in San Antonio using our product. 19 of 23 hospitals we have in San Antonio, and they continue to use the Divert. And we expect San Antonio to fully recover in Q2 of 2018. A promising indicator of this recovery is that if you look at the first 15 business days, that's counting the full 5 days of a week, but the first 15 business days in the month of April, and you compare that to the first 15 business days in the month of January, we're up 3 times higher than we were at the same time in January. So it's certainly on a pace to recover strongly from where we, to the similar levels to where we were before. We have very high confidence in the underlying performance of San Antonio as a territory and all the hospitals, and certainly our sales team there that we'll expect to see a full recovery in Q2. So that gives you a little bit of color on San Antonio, what was driving quite a bit of the number. And again, if you took San Antonio out of the two quarters, Q4 and Q1, and just looked at all the rest of the business, that was a growth of about 18%. A couple of other key highlights from Q1, the company was pleased to see North Carolina turn cash flow positive in the quarter, taking the number of cash flow positive territories that we have to 3. North Carolina followed the playbook established by San Antonio and Atlanta, and it reached cash flow break-even in 7 quarters after launch, where the goal that we have for all of our sales reps when we hire them is to make sure that they make it by 8 quarters. So it was nice to see North Carolina reach that in 7. We also added 15 new hospitals in Q1, bringing our total number of hospitals that have purchased the Divert system to 114. Having 15 new customers is great because that's areas for us to work on penetrating in the current quarter. And then when you look at leading indicators for future business, samples increased last quarter by 33% over the previous quarter. And those samples are used in a number of hospitals, and it certainly helps fuel our pipeline. We have 45 hospitals in the pipeline, and that's in the evaluation to purchase pipeline, meaning They've used a sample, they've done an evaluation, and now they're in the evaluation to purchase stage. So very strong growth in samples at 33% and 45 hospitals in the pipeline. So that gives you a little bit of color on some of the highlights of the quarter and what happened in San Antonio. So I'd like to transition now from some of the highlights of the quarter and actually talk more broadly to what are some of the trends that we see, what's causing some of the slowness that we see, and what do we do, or what strategies do we have that are focused on getting us to 20% and greater growth rates in the future. There are three different initiatives that I want to walk you through that we're clearly focused on that are designed to increase future quarter-on-quarter growth. The first is focused on hospital-wide adoption of the Divert Plus system. Our sales reps continue to work on establishing hospital care-based protocols for every chronic kidney disease patient. So what is a care path protocol? A care path protocol is a set of hospital rules that's focused on the optimal treatment of a patient. For example, in our case, a chronic kidney disease or a poor kidney function patient. And that's from the time they walk into the hospital until the time they leave the hospital. The hospital is setting up a care path protocol that makes sure they're treating that patient in the optimal way to give them the very best care and the least complications. This includes multiple departments. For example, admitting when the patient comes in, triage before the procedure itself, the cath lab where they do the procedure, and post-treatment in the ICU or coronary care unit. All those different departments are a part of these care-based protocols or care pathway protocols. Osprey benefits from this type of care path protocol because properly triage patients that are admitted properly and triaged properly, come to the cath lab already with an IV and hydration established. So they do that in the triage area or in the holding area prior to coming into the cath lab. They see that the patient's got a high creatinine level, and they start an IV solution to hydrate the patient before they come in for the procedure. When they come into the cath lab, when they have an IV, obviously that's a signal right there to everybody that works in the cath lab that this is a high-risk kidney patient. And also the triage people highlight on the medical chart that goes with the patient, they highlight that this is a high-risk kidney patient, which gives you another indicator that patient should have a dye minimization strategy, which obviously is the Divert. And the Divert not only minimizes dye, but it also monitors how much is being used. And it gives them very accurate results after the treatment of how much dye went in. So that's how we benefit by these kinds of care path protocols. So we certainly work quite a bit with the hospital administration as well as physicians to gain consensus around these care path protocols. A second area of focus for us that we believe will be an accelerator of our business in the future is working with group purchasing organizations or national accounts. Group purchasing organizations are at the forefront of the move in the United States from volume-based care or fee-for-service to what we're moving to today or in the future, certainly, today and in the future, to value-based care. And we have aligned, Osprey has aligned its clinical trial efforts with GPOs or group purchasing organizations to demonstrate care path protocols for chronic kidney disease patients lead to improved outcomes and lower cost. In addition, Osprey, we have aligned our pricing models for group purchasing organizations, offering value-based pricing with care path protocols that are focused on AKI or kidney damage-related cost reduction that offsets the price of the Divert Plus product. This offers the GPO member hospitals improved outcomes and lower costs. As our clinical trials are completed and published, the group purchasing organization will use those as best-in-class care path protocols to socialize or to sell and position to the rest of their membership, and we also as a company will do the same. So we continue to focus aggressively on national accounts because it's a strong part. It's very closely related to care path protocols. We are currently working with two of the leading GPOs in the United States, Premier and HCA, Hospital Corporation of America, on clinical trials within their member hospitals, within a few of their member hospitals, using the Divert Plus as a part of their chronic kidney disease care path protocol for AKI reduction. Premier has got 3,900 hospitals in the United States under its network. Of those, probably about 2,100 do cardiac work, so it's quite a large national hospital system. And HCA is also very large. They own all of their hospitals. They have 177 hospitals, and about 140 of those do cardiac work. Osprey is currently expecting to finish the clinical trials that we have ongoing in these two systems this year, and we expect them to publish this year in calendar year 2018. We're also engaged in national contract applications with these GPOs. National contract success, or getting a GPO contract, will allow member hospitals underneath their network to purchase the Divert Plus with a much less time-consuming new technology approval process. Currently, the approval process takes 3 to 4 months for hospitals. With a GPO contract in place, that will be reduced dramatically because they will already have approval to purchase the system. The third initiative, so those are the first two initiatives. The third initiative that we're focused on is continuing education of the cardiac cath lab staff on what happens to patients that get AKI, or acute kidney injury. It's interesting, a lot of the technicians don't know what actually happens to these patients. Certainly the nurses do, but a lot of the technicians don't. And what we have introduced, we introduced it in March, is we introduced a continuing education credit course on what preventing AKI is all about and what it, why that's good for patients and for the hospital. And in our 4C release, we actually put a link to that so everybody could look at what that looks like. It is an education-based course, so people who participate in that, or technicians who participate in that, or nurses, get continuing education credits toward their licensure. So that's a nice benefit for them, and it also educates them on the benefits of preventing AKI. Also, to facilitate the priming or the prepping of our device, we've added the a tutorial to our monitor display. So people that we've already trained, and we certainly train everybody in the cath lab, the nurses and techs, but if they need reminding, it's right there on the display unit. All they have to do is go to the tutorial, and it will remind them of the four-step process that we have for priming our device. Also in Q3, we are going to launch a product called Divert EZ. And it reduces the priming. It reduces the priming of the current model from a four-step process that takes about 2 minutes to a one-step process that takes about 30 seconds. There's some different features and benefits of the two systems, but they both work exactly the same. They both save 40% contrast. They'll both sell for the same price. And I expect about 50-50 mix when we actually sell both. About 50% of the customers will use the EZ, and about 50% will use the Plus. So this gives you a quick overview of some of the color on Q1's results, some of the reasons why that growth rate was where it was, and then more importantly, taking a step from that, just the three key strategies that the company is focused on that will give us growth rates that certainly are much higher than what we showed this quarter and get us back to the 20% and greater growth rates in the future. So with this, I would like to now call on anybody who's got questions that might be on hold.
Thank you. If you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. If you wish to cancel your request, please press star 2. If you are on a speakerphone, please pick up the handset to ask your question. Your first question comes from Maddie Smith from Canaccord Genuity. Please go ahead.
Hi, Mike. Thanks for taking my questions. I guess what I'd really like to focus on is just to maybe get a little bit more understanding of how the product's been used and, you know, ultimately with the goal of trying to understand the market opportunity given the feedback and the sales experience you've had to date. So, in terms of, you know, looking at a very high level, it seems that the device on average is being used around one to one and a bit times a week per hospital. Is that sort of consistent with the feedback you're getting from your sales guys?
So thanks, Matty, for the question. So question was twofold, or two parts to it is, first off, give you a sense for how's the product being used, and then how frequently is it being used? So how's the product being used today? Clearly, where we position it and where it is primarily being used is in chronic kidney disease patients.
Yep.
So patients with renal insufficiency, that's where it's primarily being used. We see a little bit of use, some use outside of that, for example, peripheral vascular, but the vast majority of our commercial sales are coming from CKD, and that's where we position. In terms of your question on the frequency, what's the frequency of orders? If you take the 18 sales reps that we have and you divide it straight into the 1,430 units that we did, you would come up with, your math is right, Matty, in terms of the frequency. Now, in reality, our reps are all at different tenures. So we've got three reps that are over 2 years, including the North Carolina rep that just went cash flow positive. We've got five reps that are between 1 and 2 years, and then all the balance of the reps, over 10 reps, are under 1 year. So when you look at those different groups of people, they're all at different parts or all at different usage rates. And so it's hard to say that the average, you can go to an average, but we certainly have hospitals that use it much more frequently than that. And then we have some that are just beginning. So on a quarterly basis, it's lower than that. So it is a bit variable, but where we do get it used is in CKD, and that's the primary indication. And we certainly have, when I look at nationwide in the 114 hospitals that we have and what's the penetration of what we see as CKD market into that, we're running right now in around the 25 to 30% range. So we certainly have a lot of upside with that, but that also is representative of the last two quarters. We had 30 new hospitals in just the last two quarters, 15 in Q4 and 15 in Q1, and those 30 new hospitals of our base are the ones that are those are low penetration ones.
Yep. I guess I'm sort of thinking more of your more mature accounts. When you look at those accounts, are they using it on, all of the patients that you would hope they're going to use it on, or are they restricting the use to more severe patients? And I guess probably one of the markers of that would be, are there patients who they are concerned about that they hydrate, but not concerned enough that they hydrate them but don't use Divert, or in those accounts, are pretty much all the hydrated patients also ending up on Divert?
Great question. If the patient comes, by and large, now nothing is universal, but what I'm giving you is the vast majority of the time. If the patient comes in on hydration, they're going to use Divert. So places that use our system, if the patient comes in with hydration, they're going to use Divert on them. So that's what we find as, by and large, across most hospitals, is that it gets used that way on patients with poor kidney function. Are they reserving it for only the most severe patients? If we look at San Antonio or Atlanta or North Carolina now, those are all ones that have significant tenure. And we look into the hospitals that are purchasing. We continue to see accelerating market shares in those hospitals. So they're using it in greater and greater numbers of CKD patients. In fact, if you were to look in San Antonio alone, we right now are running at about 50% of the CKD patients in San Antonio, our product is getting used on, which means we have quite a bit of upside there too, and that's growing certainly every quarter, except for this last quarter where we had down quarter, but that's the first one we've had in 14.
Yep. So if you look at the sort of most productive way that Osprey can try and accelerate the growth, would you say it is in, and both of these will be important, but is it in getting more accounts signed up, or is it about getting the accounts that have signed up to be using it more routinely on more patients?
The key thing for us, and you can see it kind of in the key strategies that we have moving forward, is penetration. So of your two questions, it's penetration. It is CarePath Protocol. So CarePath protocols make everything automatic. CarePath Protocol makes it automatic that, it, or by rule, nothing is 100%, but it's much more rigorous that the CarePath Protocol makes sure that the patient's hydrated before they come to the cath lab. It makes sure that the product is actually on the table for every CKD patient. That doesn't guarantee that the doctor is going to use everything, but it guarantees everything is there that the nursing staff is supposed to do. And afterwards, it makes sure that they're drawing creatinine levels. It makes sure that hydration continues for an hour after the procedure. So those are things that hospitals and the doctors, too, the medical staff, put in place to make sure there's a consistent regime. That is a clear, definite strategy for us. So going back to your original question, yes, it's penetration is a very big focus for us.
So
we have to do both.
So if we were sort of, revisiting some of the addressable market numbers, probably one key way of being able to do that would be the number of patients who are hydrated, for CKD patients who actually are put on hydration prior to surgery.
Correct. That's a hard thing to count, but correct, if you could count that.
And this is probably going to fall a little bit more on Nancy's shoulders than yours, but I'm just trying to get a feeling for, the potential to hit break even from the sales effort. So do you have a sort of rough number as to what this, just the sales effort costs in terms of people and bonuses and promotion and stuff like that? And I guess the other side of the equation is the type of gross margin that, you're able to generate. And where that could end up so that you can kind of back calculate when the sales effort itself could potentially achieve a break-even number.
Sure, I don't mind answering that one. And then, Nancy, you can add some color to it. But if you look, obviously, when you look at the 4C, you'll see that we spent about $4.4 million in the quarter. And then our forward projection for next quarter is $4.2 million. Most significant part of that is staff costs, but it is coming down. The reason why it comes down a bit is certainly because of acceleration of sales, continued acceleration of sales. Even though we're adding a few people, certainly we believe we'll continue to outrun that with increasing sales. So in terms of, now your second question is around, probably a more important question is, what does it mean to cash flow positive, and how do we look at the business in terms of a cash flow positive? Certainly the quarter, which was a disappointment for us, below our own internal expectations and our own business and our own plans, is one that we now have to reconfigure and look at what cash flow positive indicator is for us. It does extend cash flow positive. Previously, we had talked about early 2001 time frame.
2021 or?
2000, yeah. 21, very early, late 20, early 21 is what we had previously been commenting on.
Yep.
It's going to put about another 6 to 9 months on that timeline. So that now puts it back later in 2021,
yep.
In terms of cash flow positive.
And are you able to provide, what sort of GM you're getting currently on the devices?
Yeah, Nancy, you want to handle that? Are you on mute?
Of course. Yes, this is Nancy. And we are currently getting, at the end of this quarter, approximately 30% gross margin, and we're planning on achieving closer to 50 to 60% margins by the end of 2018 and growing all the way to 2022, up in the 75 to 80% margin.
Okay. And is that increase from...
We're on a really good track at this point.
Is that 30 to 60% purely volume, or are there other initiatives to lower the cost that will allow that increase?
Yes, we have many initiatives that are in place right now to lower the cost.
Okay.
And also we will be having initiatives sorted around the volume increases.
Okay. That sounds great. That's very helpful. Thanks, guys.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Steve Wayne from Evans & Partners. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Mike, just back on the first 15 days comments for San Antonio, have you looked at that for the group, and what does that look like at a group level from a growth perspective versus the first 15 days of January?
Really good question, Steve. And as soon as you ask it, I wish I had done it. I haven't done the analysis, but I will comment off the top of my head because obviously we get the numbers every day, but I didn't compare them to Q1. But I know they are higher than January at the same time frame of today versus that same time frame in January, but I don't know exactly how many. I can't tell you the exact percent. I do know San Antonio, for example, was three times higher. But I should have looked at that. I don't have that off the top of my head, though.
Okay. And then just secondly, we're now looking at three sales reps, as you say, that have reached cash flow positive positions. You mentioned in terms of the way you stratified your sales reps that you've got five sitting between 1 to 2 years of in the field, I guess, tenure. Can you sort of talk us through how close or whether they're all on track, ahead of schedule, behind schedule, with regards to achieving that break-even cash flow status after 8 quarters, please?
Yeah, absolutely. Of the five, we have four of them that are, let me rephrase that. Of the five, we have three of them that are right on track with where North Carolina was. And we have two of them that are moving a bit slower than that. Not so slow that it's warning bells going off that they are well behind. That's not the case, but not on exactly that same track. But three of them are on track to do what North Carolina did, and two of them are slightly behind that pace.
And so essentially three on track to actually get ahead of the 8 quarters time frame that you originally set them.
Correct.
Yeah, okay. And then just lastly from me, just a clarification point around the GPO contracts. To sign a national contract, do those organizations have to see the finalization of those specific clinical trials, or could can they happen independently of each other?
No, good question. So no, they're not tied to the clinical trials. I'll tell you, so I'm glad you asked the question because it's an interesting point. They're not tied to those clinicals. All of the clinical work that we've already done, have already did, and the FDA approvals that we have, all of that's already gone in submissions to those groups. Very hard to predict national accounts and how long it takes to get through their GPO process. However, we do expect at least two of them this calendar year. So why do I even bring up then some of the clinical work that we're doing in the group? You're not barred from doing clinical work in the group. It accelerates it when you get a contract. It accelerates some of the other members to come on board. The reason why we're doing the clinical work is when you get a contract in place and you combine the contract with clinical work that shows a care pathway and the improvements that happen with a care pathway, that becomes a very good example that the group, the GPO, then socializes. They call it socializes it, another form of sale. They sell it to their membership that this is best-in-class quality and this is the way to deliver it. That's very advantageous for us because then other hospitals go, okay, we'd like to do that program, and obviously we're a part of that program.
Yep. Got it. Can I just actually go back to my first question and just put it slightly differently? Are there any regions that you're in that the experience in the current quarter is actually below that of January in terms of units?
I don't know off the top of my head. I would say with the 18 sales territories that we have, I'm sure we have at least one that may be that situation. I'm not 100% sure, though. I'm not looking at it. So it's a good question, but I'm not 100% sure.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
But I guess I can't answer. Let me give you a more broad answer. I know overall our business is stronger today than it was at the same point in January. I know it's stronger, so that it's not like the sales force, only one territory, San Antonio, is doing well. We have a number of them that are doing well, a number of them that are running to what our sales plan is for the month, and that there's more of them running to sales plan at this time into the quarter than it would have been last in January into that same quarter.
Yep. And when you say stronger, you're talking units or growth?
Units.
Okay.
So we're always comparing. We have forecasts that we have for obviously for every sales rep for a full quarter. And so we're always looking at what's their percent of forecast attained. And so it is at a stronger clip today than it would have been at the same time frame in January.
Yeah.
How much stronger, what percent stronger, I don't know that. I didn't do that analysis. I did do it for San Antonio. I didn't do it for the whole. I wish I would have.
That's all for me. Thank you.
You bet. Thanks, Steve.
Thank you. Once again, if you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. Your next question comes from John Hester from Bell Potter Securities. Please go ahead.
Hi, Mike. Just a quick question on these national accounts. Do you expect that in relation to pricing on those, obviously they're very large hospital groups, very, very large buyers, do you expect to be able to have to offer price incentives in order to get more broad adoption in those groups?
Yeah, good question. Thanks, John. So a couple things on pricing. First off, one, I didn't mention this, but I'm sure many people picked it up, but the average selling price actually went up last quarter. It went up by $4. So even though the units increased, the ASP continues to go up. So more specifically to your question is, for these GPOs, are they going to require price concessions or lower prices than our average selling price today to get their business? We do not believe so. However, they do require administration fees. So what is an administration fee and what's the norm? I'll give you a Premier and HCA are good examples. Mm-hmm. They charge an administration fee of about 3%. So what we could see from our current ASP is a 3% decline because of the payment that we make for administration fees. However, we do believe that the average selling price of the product to the hospital minus the administration fee won't come down to gain that contract.
Okay. All right. So you'd expect that while your gross price is the same, your net price would come down. Your net or average selling price would come down. Okay, that's fine. Okay. You mentioned on previous calls a couple of other groups who are doing some clinical trials who are thinking about publishing some of their results. Are you able to give us an update on some of those?
Yeah, so many of those previous hospitals, so I'll give you a couple of examples because we mentioned specific hospitals like Vidant Hospital and St. Luke's Hospital in Kansas City. These are very large hospitals. Vidant is a premier hospital. So that's one that's already underway. It is a premier hospital. It's one that we're working with. We've also got efforts underway with HCA hospitals. The Methodist System in San Antonio is an HCA hospital. So we have efforts underway with them. St. Luke's is an independent, seven hospital system in Kansas City, very well known. That's another effort that's underway. So we have those efforts underway. Actually, we even have a few more than those, but they're also represented not only as hospitals, but also within GPOs too.
Okay. And when you mentioned earlier on that you're going to have some clinical results later this calendar year, is that going to be out of those names that you just mentioned, or is it some other work?
St. Mary's. And so here's a couple of clinical works that we know will come out this year.
Okay.
We have clinical work that goes on podium very late on Friday in the United States.
Yep.
And so we expect we'll make a press release next week about that. So that's at the SCA and I meeting, which we actually made a pre-release on this in the March timeframe of this year, announcing to everybody that this was going to be published, and it is going to be this week. So we'll make a press release once those results are announced. So that's one trial that will come out. St. Mary's in Huntington, West Virginia. They've completed their work also, and we certainly expect that to be published. Sugar Land Hospital in Houston's completed their clinical work, and we expect that to be published. And then some work that we're doing with Premier, we also expect to be published this year. So we expect publications this year. We've commented at least two of them, but we have a number more than two that are set to go forward. However, publishing, I will remind everyone, is very difficult to predict. Even though we have a number of things that are in process, we're conservative on our estimates because it's very hard to predict what peer-reviewed scientific journals what pace they move at is not as fast as we want them to move. So we're conservative based upon all the work that we have that's completed. We're conservative by saying that two will publish this year.
And just finally, is it, in your view, is it care protocols or is it cost that is the key obstacle? I mean, you've talked many times about the need to remove costs from the system in order to get broad adoption. You know, that's one aspect. The other aspect is care protocols and making sure that you're getting great patient outcomes. Where do you see it landing at the moment?
Well, we do know from work with big hospital systems that certainly cost is the biggest thing. And how do you drive cost down? As you improve outcomes. So if you reduce bad outcomes, it improves the cost profile for the hospital. It lowers their cost because they're not spending money on these bad outcomes. One of the best pathways, the most consistent pathway to get that, is if they institute care protocols. Let's take it out of our product and put it in something like Total Hips. The same thing exists there, too.
Okay.
So care path protocols are very important.
Okay, thank you very much. That's all for me.
Thank you.
Thanks, John.
There are no further questions at this time. I will now hand back to Mr. McCormick for closing remarks.
Thank you, everybody, very much for joining our conference call on the 4C results from Q1. We have our AGM, Annual General Shareholders Meeting, that will be coming up on May the 10th, and we look forward to giving a further update at that time on our business and how we've progressed. Thank you all very much.